Hey everyone, I'm Matt Peterson. I'm a pastor here at Awake Church and lead Hydrating Humanity, and this is called Into the Deep. This is our podcast that we've been doing periodically to go into the deep with some folks. You know, when Jesus was on the seashore speaking to people, standing in Peter's boat, he got done talking, turned around to Peter and looked at him and said, hey, let's push out and go into the deep together. And of course, they had a great catch. And who knows what kind of conversation they had on that boat. Just the two of them, perhaps, could have been others on the boat. But we wanted to have a format for something like that where we can have some wonderful guests in and talk about some stuff from the past into the deep and bring out some great stuff. So today with me is a close friend, someone I've known for a very, very long time, John Mark McMillan. And as so many people watching this will know who you are. But some may not. So John Mark has been around in the music industry, Christian music industry, for a long time, singer, songwriter, and now in a movie. So
yeah.
Now you got the acting side in there as well, and part of your family as well.
Yep.
But, of course, known you for a long time, your wife, Sarah, and your kids, they are also at least two of them in music with you.
Yeah.
Sarah was on the stage last night. Of course, she's had a song that's been in every church around around the country and the world too, but just an amazing guy. And so I wanted to dive in a little bit, reminisce a little bit with you. We go way back. So I remember moving to Charlotte in '95 with my wife, and you guys were the next neighborhood over from us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to meet your dad, your mom, you guys. You were a teenager at the time.
Yeah.
And just, you know, it's been so great to not only get to know you, but to watch what the Lord has done with you and the decisions you've made and the things that have happened in your life, particularly related to music, but other things too. And it's just been really wonderful to have you involved in our lives and for me to see what God's doing with you. And you, of course, you've been on our Hydrating Humanity board for a long time.
Yep.
You've done a lot of things with raising money for Hydrating Humanity. We'll talk a little bit about some of those things too, even though this is not necessarily a Hydrating Humanity podcast, but there's a blend there with that. But let me talk, just kind of go back a little bit here. And last night, there was a show last night that you guys did with your band. Here was wonderful. You had some songs over the years that you brought in, were just awesome. And to see Sarah up there with Jude up there playing as well. Was that the first time he was playing?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, which was so cool. He's 16.
Yep.
And that was just great. But during that, you were talking some about your journey, spiritual journey. And something that happened when you were 7 years old, I think, right?
Yeah.
And that kind of, you know, I met the Lord at seven too, but similar to you probably, something kind of kicked off from there of a desire for God.
Yeah.
And do you mind sharing just a little bit of that?
Yeah, I'd love to.
We'll fast forward a little bit too.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I was 7 years old. I was at a vacation Bible school. I'm guessing it was the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
I feel like I remember it, you know. It's a long time ago, but we were in this church, which is, I recently saw some pictures. It's actually way smaller than I remember.
Yeah,
but it was a small church. My dad was pastoring at one point, and then he kind of handed it over. I don't remember where this was in that process, but we were going to this church. It's vacation Bible school, and I was with some of my friends. We were sitting in pews. I think we were like sitting on the back of the pew, you know, like with our feet in the seat, you know, and like... there was a special musician came through. It was actually Ken Helser.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No kidding.
Ken Helser's a father to one of my friends who I'd meet 20 years later or something.
Yeah.
10 years later. 12 years, I don't know. But he was just playing, and I no one was talking to me. No one was making an invitation. No one had taught me about the Holy Spirit. I didn't know about any of that stuff. I'm seven, and I'm with my buddies, and the next thing I know, I'm just crying. And of course, you know, they all think there's something wrong with me. All my friends do, you know. And but I wasn't sad, And and I wasn't even embarrassed. I mean, at seven, I was old enough to be embarrassed. I wanted to be cool for my buddies. Yeah. One of my friends there was, you know, everyone has that friend that you think hung the moon, right? And that, you know, I was with that guy, right? And I started crying, and I didn't know what was happening, but I knew that I liked the way I felt. That I and this is how I felt, and I describe it this way. So this is not my theology, but this is how I felt. You know, if I had to define how I felt like the universe was in love with me, and I was in love with every person in the universe as a seven-year-old. Right? As a seven-year-old, I had compassion on every person I'd ever met, and I felt like whatever forces created this world, their affections were pointed at me, right? And I was thinking about that recently, and I was like, you know, the highest theology is to love God and love your neighbor, right?
Jesus said this, that.
Jesus said that, that all theology hangs on these two commandments. And I realized how interesting it is that, like, we work our whole lives to try and learn this thing that I felt in my body at 7 years old, right? And, you know, people can, I realized over the years, people can take a lot of things from me. I mean, you could argue me out of a lot of things. You know, but it's like, I don't know how you could argue me out of that. You could maybe like argue over what kind of God it was, or was it God? But, you know, and obviously it was God, it was Jesus. You know, but you could argue a number of different points to a seven-year-old, but you can't debate whether or not that happened, right?
Absolutely.
And, you know, maybe I was manipulated by the music. I was like, I don't know. I've done music for a long time. And I don't know. I mean, maybe you can manipulate people with music. But if you can manipulate someone to feel loved by the world and to love other human beings, it's like, I don't know. That maybe is is maybe that's something more than manipulation. And I don't think that was happening, right? Either. So for me, it's like that moment really marked my whole life. From that moment, I realized at seven, and you know, your commitment level at 7 years old is you know, shaky. But I knew at seven, like, I wanted to feel that feeling as often as possible. And I wanted to I wanted to love other people. I wanted to love my friends, wanted to love my parents, my brothers and sisters. And I wanted to feel that thing as often as I could. And over throughout the years, I have been able to find that feeling in the music that I make. And I realized that, like, I've spent my whole life making that, looking for that feeling, looking for that place in the music. And I have hoped my whole life that I could share that music with other people, and hopefully they could feel that feeling. And you know, it's interesting how you can lose that over the years, and how, like, I don't know why it wasn't a thing I forgot very soon. It followed me for years. And I remember waking up years later thinking, like, I'm different. There's something about me. Whatever happens is okay. Because of what, because of this thing, right? That my parents tell me is Jesus, right? And I lose that language, but every now and then I would think about that, and I'd be like, man, isn't that weird? And I and then I feel like maybe life just gets busy, and I maybe forgot about it for like 10 years. And then out of the blue, I'm not sure why it came back to me. Maybe it was when I was trying to figure out, why did I get into this? Because I went through a long period of like, is worship music really even worth doing? Is this what I'm called to? Do I even like this? Is that, you know? And in the last 2 years, I found myself like re-enamored, if that's a word, with worship music, at least the way I see it. At least what from what I believe it's supposed to be, or you know. And I began to ask myself, when did this all start? Like, why did I get into this to begin with? And I was like, oh man, this actually happened a long time ago. And I realized, had that not happened, I kind of think my life would have gone in a totally different direction. Because my parents are very creative, but neither one of them considers himself to be musical. I think my dad has a guitar, and maybe he'll pull it out and play three chords.
And I've heard him sing sometimes.
I know.
He has a booming voice.
He does. I'm trying to convince my brother to turn the auto tune on in church and do the Post Malone thing.
You know,
but But yeah, I realized my life would have probably gone another direction. My parents are not musical. I didn't grow up in a musical household. And I don't. And I was like, why did I even get into music to begin with? When did this all begin for me? And that was it. And I literally think I could have gone in a totally different direction with my life.
Absolutely. Had that not happened. Interesting. So that was kind of the beginning, initiation of some things that God was doing. I remember around the time I met you, you also had some sort of an experience, I think, around baptism.
Yeah, yeah,
what,
I did.
What was that? Was that a journey maybe 10 years later, something like that?
Yeah, that would have been, So I probably would have been 16 or 17, so it would have been about exactly 10 years later, I went through that teenage period of angst, you know.
Yep.
Like, I think that, you and I were talking earlier about how all our kids are so different, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like, but I was a very sensitive teenager, very moody, very, my parents tell me that was intense. I was an artist, and I didn't know how to be an artist as a teenager.
Yeah.
I had this sensitivity to, I mean, maybe even you would say sensitivity to spiritual things, but certainly to art and music and people. And I wanted to be liked.
Sure.
You know, I went through what a lot of teenagers went through, like feeling awkward and out of place and, you know, and do I fit with the misfits? And
right.
Then they were doing drugs and stuff. And I was like, I don't really fit with them either. I'm not really interested in the drugs. And that makes me, even being around it makes me really nervous because I didn't want to get in trouble, you know, so right. I had a hard time finding my place. And I think there may have been times I maybe even resented my dad a little bit, you know, because he took the spiritual path and, you know, and maybe I don't know why. Maybe it's just a teenage thing. There are those moments where you're like, you're carving out your own identity.
Yeah, trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had really sort of like, sort of in my heart moved away from the Lord.
Yeah.
You know? And we had set up this baptismal. It was actually an indoor swimming pool in my parents' storefront church.
Yeah.
And I might get a little emotional.
That's all right. Yeah.
But my best friend, Steve Coffey, you know, he passed away about 20 years ago, but
we'll talk about him in a minute.
But we were good friends before we were interested in God.
Okay. Yep.
And he was largely not interested in God when I first met him. He was very interested in in girls.
Right.
You know, somewhat successful in his interests, you know. He's a good-looking guy, very charismatic, and he was very liked.
Yeah.
And he and I were so different. Had tons of personality. Yep. He was very much into sports. I was more into music. I was into goth. He was into, working out.
Yeah.
And we became the oddest friends, even visually. He was kind of short. I was kind of tall.
Yeah.
We were just the oddest friends. Like, I don't know how, on paper it doesn't even make sense, right. But we became friends, and he somehow became interested in God, and I was like, this is really interesting, Steve, so you're interested in God, and it's just really, and he they had this baptismal, and at the end they planned to baptize some people, and out of the blue, he decided to get baptized. He didn't bring any clothes, whatever.
You weren't planning on it.
No, wasn't planning on it. And after he did it, something inspired me to jump in the water. And I don't even know what it was. But maybe it was that feeling that I had when I was, seven.
Yeah.
Maybe it was that feeling again. Yeah. But something about this time I saw him do it.
Yep.
As before, it was just random. Or not, it obviously wasn't random, but it was, it felt very much out of the blue.
Yeah.
Felt disconnected from anything else. There weren't even other kids having that experience when I had it.
Yeah.
But, and I'd never really seen it before either. So I wasn't copying. I wasn't trying to do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but back to the baptism. Yeah. So that one's a little emotional for me because he passed away a few years later.
Yeah. So in that, some of what I remember is kind of at that experience for both he and you, was maybe some sort of what we would call a rededication to the Lord, almost it like was, a renewal of your heart.
Definitely, right? Yeah. Reinterested in the things of the Lord. And, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were teenagers too, so we're also sort of like, you're bouncing around.
You're knuckleheads.
You're still struggling, but you're fumbling towards the light.
Right, yeah. That's a good way to describe it. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
But something genuine happened that day for both of you.
Oh, yeah.
On in this lifelong journey, spiritual journey, that this is a marker, isn't it, for you? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so kind of following that a little bit longer with Stephen, you guys developing a relationship, your friendship, and then your spiritual relationship has taken off. Did music then, you know, kind of come into the picture a little bit for you? Because I don't remember, did you just like pick up a guitar when you were little, or was it around that time that something kind of more of an interest, or you're fiddling around a little more with it, or what happened?
So I had, probably a few years prior, my other, another good friend of mine was a guitar player, and he came over to the house, and he and I started a couple of bands together, and we played. And so I was already into playing music, but I never felt like a singer, you know? I really, like I said, didn't grow up in a musical household, so I didn't feel like a singer. I really just wanted to be involved, right? And like in the 90s, being in a band was so exciting because it's stuff you do with other people. There was status attached to it.
Yeah.
There was community attached to it. It was...
Sure.
And so I always wanted to be in a band, and I loved music, but I, you know, I was a little bit of a late bloomer musically. But after this experience, I woke up with this crazy idea, and you know I'm an idea guy. I always have ideas.
Yeah, great ideas.
I was like, what if we invited a bunch of teenagers over to the house to do something? I didn't even know what to do.
Like a jam?
Just do something with the Lord. So I remember printing this, like I cut a bunch of, I took a, you know, because back then you couldn't just make something on the computer very easily.
Yeah.
And so I remember getting a bunch of magazines and cutting the letters out. And I made this poster that I taped them onto the piece of paper, and then I copied it on the copy machine. You know, I made like, you know, like 100 copies, you know. And I remember it was an invitation. I remember it was so funny. It's like something about like, do you feel your Holy Ghost buzz wearing down during the week, right? I was like, maybe we can get together and do something.
Yeah.
But I had no idea what we were going to do.
Yeah.
I just thought, that's, you know. And so we, I was like, I was planning to strum the guitar, and there are some of the girls who like to sing. And I got printed out some charts, and they could sing, and I could strum the guitar. You know, we had like a friend bring a drum kit over. So we were in my parents' living room. Right, we put some of the furniture outside, you know.
Yeah,
like, and I started to strum the chords, and the girls were too nervous to sing. And I was like, "We have all these kids over. I don't know what to do." So I was like, I kind of started singing, even though even though I couldn't really sing, just to get it going.
Yeah,
and we had a blast, and we did that, you know, for weeks. Right, so I started this little home group. I had no idea what I was doing. And but that's the first time I ever sang or
publicly.
Even attempted to.
Yeah.
So I sort of kind of became the singer of that thing.
In that something.
And then years later, I would start writing songs, writing my own songs. But yeah, see, I never, it's one of those things I never intended to do.
Okay.
And it just kind of happened.
Yeah.
Right? I was just in the place, and it just kind of happened. Yeah, and Stephen, of course, was involved.
Yeah,
in a lot of that.
Yeah, and
well.
That and that group, I think, continued for a while.
Yeah,
in lots of like the Lord was doing stuff in kids' lives, and it's pretty amazing. And then I remember you singing. You were talking about your voice. You didn't realize that you were a singer.
Yeah, yeah,
or could probably.
Yeah.
And even I've watched this. I would call it just an amazing progression with your voice.
Yeah, yeah.
Of you, and I don't know what you've done to do all that. Yeah. You have an awesome voice.
Well, thanks.
But it really has just, so you, I don't know if you worked on that, or you said, God, help me with my voice in the beginning, no, whatever.
It was, well, I mean, I definitely prayed.
Yeah.
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 And I realized, like, and I, you know, I played in several bands, and they kind of didn't work out. And at a point, I realized, like, maybe for it to work, I'm going to have to be the leader.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Like,
yeah.
I don't know who said, what's the quote about some people are born leaders and some people have leadership thrust upon them, yes, right?
Right.
And I was one of those people where, like, I didn't want to be a leader,
mm.
but to do what I wanted to do in the world required a leader. And I was like, I guess it's got to be me.
Yes, exactly.
You can identify. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, later on, I did take vocal lessons, and I've, even today, I think about it and I work on it. You know, and I think a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people think music is a gift you're born with.
Right.
And there are, like anything, you know, like like basketball. Some people are born taller. Some people are more agile, you know. But even those people, you know, like Michael Jordan was born with more gifting than you or I.
Correct.
But if either one of us worked as hard as him, we'd still be better than anyone in the neighborhood, right?
Right.
We'd still be the best in our community.
Still as good as him, but yes, right. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. That's great for people to hear.
Yeah.
Whether it's voice, talent, skill.
Yeah.
I mean, you put a lot of work into.
I have put a lot of work.
All of that.
Yeah.
You know, songwriting, you know, that's not easy.
It's not. Yeah.
There's a lot of work. There's a lot of work that goes behind the scenes. Anything done on stage.
Yeah.
Probably has 1,000 hours behind the scenes, right?
It is,
in every part.
Yeah.
Before we continue with the conversation, I wanted to take a minute to share about Hydrating Humanity. For the past 19 years, Hydrating Humanity has provided clean drinking water sources, hygiene education, and the news of Jesus' love to over 500,000 people in Eastern Africa, saving lives and transforming villages. You can make a huge difference in the lives of many by being a part of one tribe, where $25 per month gives one new person clean water for life and reaches them with God's love. 100% of your monthly gift goes directly to fund projects. Please go to joinonetribe.com and join the tribe that is changing the world.
So, you know, one of the things that I have appreciated, I don't know if I've told you, but just with your music along the way is... You are unique in many ways, I would say. One is the kind of music that you write is it's authentic, it's real, it's deep. It's not just surfacey stuff. It's not saying the same word over and over and over and over. It just has a real depth and uniqueness to it, and I think it's emotional also. Mm-hmm. You know, even from your first album, 2005. You know, just there's emotion with the Lord and a drawing to the Lord. I've had some great experiences with the Lord listening to your music throughout the years. Even when songs come on or I hear them, you know, I can remember the moment I first heard that song of yours, and I can like the name of the song, "Running After You." I don't know.
It's probably, Heart Runs.
Heart Runs. Yeah. You did it last night.
Yep.
I was on an airplane. First time I heard that, and I was like, crying on the plane. So so God has really gifted you as you've pursued and worked at it. It's like the Lord has touched it as well, and it's been amazing. I'm gonna cry too during this thing here, so because I'm thinking about, of course, Stephen, as we mentioned.
Yeah.
And I remember in those early years as you were writing and, you know, doing some, and then Stephen died. Yeah. So the guy you were just talking about, Stephen Coffey, great friend of yours. I was leading the school of ministry at a church then, and Stephen was a third year student. Mm-hmm. So I'd known him for 3 years or so.
Yeah.
And he died tragically in a car accident in November 2002, 2001, somewhere in there. I don't even remember exactly. And it was really rough for everybody, for you more than most. But from that, there was a song that was birthed that probably more people know you by than any other song, I'm guessing, up to this point, How He Loves.
Yeah.
And so can you share just maybe just a little bit about how that song came out? Let me first say this. I remember I was in a class of yours. You were doing a songwriting class I sat in on, and you said something to the effect of, you don't write songs, you bleed them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that has stayed with me, obviously. Yeah. And speaking of the life that we live and so many of the things that we go through that are really tough or super difficult or devastating or whatever, and out of that, a song or a poem or a, you know, whatever goes to the, you know, something to the Lord. And so can you, hopefully we can hold together here a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
How did that happen with you with that song?
Yeah. So, and yes, I want to speak to that quote of you don't write songs, you bleed them.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely believe that. I think that, I mean, that there's a lot of ways to do art and do mm-hmm. music and to make things. But I feel like the stuff that means the most to me feels like it's the overflow of a person's life.
Yes.
It means it's the to bleed a song means like it's what's coming out of you.
Yeah.
And you give it a platform in your music rather than trying to say something significant. And it's fine right. to say something significant. It's another right. thing to be like, there's this significant thing happening in me.
Yeah.
How can I give that a platform?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so
that's
with
really good.
Stephen Coffey, I actually wrote the first kind of couple of lines
mm-hmm.
of that song. They're probably not exactly like what we sing today. I don't remember because I don't know that I recorded it. I have okay. the journal,
yeah.
though.
Do you?
That's
yeah.
in. Yeah. yeah. And I had played him those songs. So if I was making a movie about this, I would say this is 100% true, but I don't remember exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But in my mind, it was the last time I saw him. And he loved that song. And I told him, I don't think it's a song. I don't think it's any good. And he was like, man. The problem is this sounds too, and I rarely tell this part because it sounds a little too fantastic to be true.
Yeah.
The problem is it's kind of true. And he basically said, that song's going to make you famous. And I was like, no, it's wow. not. I was like, it's not a song.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't want to be famous. I had that like false humility. Like I'm going to be a starving artist and serve
yeah.
the Lord. And, you know, and also it sounds so egocentric to say stuff like that. But the problem is right. it actually happened.
Right. Yep.
You know? And so I guess the truth is allowed to be the truth, even if it makes me sound a little bit egocentric. Cause
yeah.
I have no ego in that song.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad that it's out in the world, but it wasn't a lot of work to write. It yeah. it kind of flowed, but he
how much
said
of
that
it was
me.
Written? How much of that song was
it
written
was like
before,
maybe,
and then how much?
It was maybe two or three lines.
Okay,
but really nothing more.
Yeah,
it was a very small portion.
Yeah,
and after he passed away, I felt like I wanted to finish it as an homage, really
right.
to him.
Sure,
I really just it's written for the Lord. It's a worship song.
Yeah,
it's not me singing to Steve. You
right,
know, we yeah, were buddies.
Yeah. yeah,
but you know, but it was me like to honor him in a sense. It's like I'm gonna finish that song because I knew he liked it.
Yeah,
so
interesting.
I finished it as an homage, and didn't necessarily plan on playing it for anybody. I mean, I thought it was a good song. You know, maybe if I do another recording, I'll record that song and. We were doing I was at a youth event not long after that. My other good friend, Chris Allen, who I credit with inventing the worship build in worship music. Most people don't realize,
really?
But I'm pretty sure, and people will argue with me about it, but if we could sit down, that's really boring.
Wow.
That's another podcast altogether.
Okay.
But yeah. I think my buddy Chris invented the worship build in worship music.
Hmm.
We're playing it, youth event kind of thing.
Yeah.
And afterwards, they want us to come back up for ministry time. I'm like, man, I'm so tired of playing all the songs that I've been playing. Mm-hmm. I'm like, guys, I'm going to do this song. It's four chords. Just watch me. Right? And I started playing it.
Mm-hmm.
And something crazy happened. The people started singing along.
Was this in Nashville? Was it that one? Or was it
this was No, this was before was Nashville.
Okay.
Yeah. This was in Charlotte at the hotel uptown that where we did
the Adams Mark
or, at the Adams
yeah,
Mark. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
And then it's like, you felt this big energy
yeah.
happening. And I was like, it needs to go somewhere. And Chris started hitting the drums really hard. You remember he's the loudest drummer in
yes.
the universe.
Yes.
Right?
And, like animal on the drums.
Yeah, thing. He absolutely. yes. And he started playing. I had to sing over that. And so the chorus spontaneously happened in that moment.
Oh, wow.
And at that moment, it became a song, and I'm like, well, I think this is a song that people want to sing. I think this is a song I'm going to want to do.
Yeah.
And so that's really sort of
no kidding
how it happened.
I didn't know
had a couple lines in a journal, sang for him. He passed away. I finished it as an homage to him. Mm. And then the chorus happened in a spontaneous moment. Then for years, I always thought about him.
Amazing. Yeah. It's and now that song, you know, I can't imagine this far. I was just looking today, like on your Spotify, I think it's like 4.5 million plays on that song. Plus, it's in all these other languages.
Yeah.
It's going around the world. Yeah. It's in churches.
Oh, yeah.
Sung.
Yeah.
Been the millions.
Yeah.
Over and over.
Yeah, and that's only that version of the song that has 4 million. Like, I think,
wow.
I don't know what the numbers are,
but
they're in the tens of millions, maybe even 100 million when you combine when you combine all of the different versions
and all the different artists that have
covered it.
That have covered it.
Yeah, but it is wild. So it's been translated in so many languages. I mean, in Brazil alone, there are probably 10 different versions of the song.
Yeah,
you know,
it's incredible.
In Portuguese, yeah.
Incredible. And it really is a song about, of course, as the backstory with Stephen, but of the Lord's love for us, how God really loves us.
Yeah.
And I think at the time that came out, pretty powerful for the body of Christ to have kind of a reframing of what the Father's like, because I think he was a little bit more of a harsher understanding as to who God is, and just really powerful. So it's really fun to see how God used you in that, and it's still going. You probably run into it all over the place.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah. And people love to argue about the sloppy wet kiss line.
I was going to ask about that, of course. That first got taken out. I forget. Was it Gunger? I forgot who.
David Crowder.
David Crowder, that's right. They took out the sloppy wet kiss line, replaced it with something else.
Yeah.
There was an uprising.
Right? Yeah. It's fun, though. You know, I feel like he catches a lot of flack about that.
Yeah.
But he introduced the song to a whole group of people who would never hear it, because people don't realize things have changed a little bit, but especially back then, there are these, they're gatekeepers, people who you know, control what goes on the radio and what, you know, and it's not like they refused to play that song with that line, but he kind of knew it would get a much better shot if it didn't have that line in
it.
And so he changed it, and it gave a whole new audience.
Yeah.
But the controversy has been fun, because it also keeps the story of the song alive.
Sure.
You know, and people will insult me about it sometimes on the internet. And
really?
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. It's keeping the song alive and keeping the conversation.
Yeah.
You know.
So during your spiritual journey, life's journey, along the way, at what point did you feel like, you know, music isn't just this fun thing to do, but, man, I feel like this is my purpose, a part of your purpose in life or calling, or how did that happen?
Yep. So it was around the same time that I wrote that song, maybe a year earlier. You know, when you're young, time seems much longer. It's probably a 2-year period of time, but looking back, it felt like a decade.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But all that happens in that period of life. But around that same time, I was playing in a kids ministry thing, and I had written a song, and some of the we were at a big conference, and this is back when conference culture was a huge thing.
Yes,
there still are conferences, but I feel like this was the height of late 90s, early 2000s conference culture. So, you know, there's probably 5,000-6,000 people at this event. Held a kids event. The kids pastor had me in playing, and I, you know, of course, I just love to play. So yeah, I'll play with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Let me plug my guitar in, and he, the kids pastor, heard me do a couple of songs. He's like, "Let's do one of yours," you know. So I was doing this song, and some of the worship leaders from the main, you know, service walked in, and I don't even know why they were there. They heard it in the hall, and they stepped in. And they heard me, sing the song, and then the next night I did the song, and they brought some more of the worship team in, and I was so intimidated because these are Nashville guys. These are professional musicians. And afterwards they said, "Why don't you come do that song in the main?"
I remember.
So I don't think I'd ever led worship for adults at this point. Not once ever, you know.
Yeah.
Had my little home group.
Yep.
Led a little worship with the kids, little youth group stuff, you know. Maybe in ministry school for the class, you know, but like...
Yeah.
I don't know that I'd hardly, if ever, maybe once or twice, but hardly ever led worship for adults. I'm probably 20.
Yeah.
No, 19, 20. So something, somewhere in there. Maybe 21. But probably not. Yeah, but anyway, in that time. And they had me come, and I remember setting my guitar up and plugged my amp in and sound checked, and I was so intimidated, and came back and started strumming, and I was so scared I could not
oh, no.
sing the first note in the microphone. So the background singer started singing my song for me, and then I joined in with them.
Yeah.
When we got to the chorus, the entire crowd erupted, and I felt this, and this is something that's hard to describe. Mm. I'm sure everyone has had this feeling at some point in their life in one way or another, but very few human beings get to experience this experience.
Mm.
To hear your words
come back.
Yeah. Sung back to you by 5,000 people.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Mm-mm.
And I walked off the stage and I was like, you might as well have given me like a hit of cocaine or something.
Sure.
I'm joking. I've never done drugs. Right. But I'm saying like,
it was a high.
As far as I know, that's the closest thing to a drug, right? Was that feeling. I was like, I will figure out how to do that again.
I
don't know how.
Sure.
But I'm kind of joking, but not really. Like, it was I felt like I never knew that I had a calling, but if I have a calling, this is it.
Yeah.
This is my life.
Yeah.
I felt the pleasure of God in that moment. And honestly, it goes back. It was the way I felt when I was 7.
Earlier. Yeah.
Right. It was like, I've been all my life looking for this feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we can talk theologically about feelings and how much they matter and whether or not they matter. But I think there's a theology of emotion.
Sure.
Obviously, all of it needs to be tempered and balanced.
Right.
But for me, like, that feeling has been a big part of my life. And,
sure.
You know, and maybe I'm getting ahead, though. I've also realized I actually can have that feeling at pretty much any time.
Yeah, yeah.
If I will let the Lord in.
Yeah.
Like, I can be in that place any time.
That's right.
Any moment in my life.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know if I'm getting off the page. No, but later in life, I've realized that, like, that's one of the gifts of my relationship with the Lord, of Christian spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
It's like is the gift of the inner life.
Yeah.
You know, we don't talk. I don't believe we talk enough about that in Western Christianity. It's how much access we have to a robust inner life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was just going to say that, you know, it's the Holy Spirit. I feel like that much of what you're that feeling, that sense, that yearning for, is that inner life experience, fellowship with the Holy Spirit. Yeah.
And it's always there. Always been there.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, wooing us and drawing us closer.
Hey, if you are just getting to know Awake Church or found us through this podcast, I just want to share a little bit here. Our mission is to know Jesus personally, to become progressively more like him, and make his name known everywhere. We like to say, know God, take action. We are a community of awakened sons and daughters of the King, growing together, loving and worshiping God together, and releasing his love into this world. You can learn more about our leadership team, our values and beliefs, and check out upcoming events at awakechurch.com.
So, John Mark, throughout your really music career, you've been doing this now. I was looking at your first album. It's 2005. Here we are, 2025.
Yeah.
20 years.
Yeah.
You've been doing this. Some favorite experiences, whether it's stage, off stage, people's lives, people sharing things with you, because I'm sure certainly you've heard testimonials from people and all those kind of things. Or things.
Yeah.
Anything come to mind? Just,
man, I have so many amazing memories. I remember playing in Germany the first time at a festival called Freakstock. You know, they served beer in the tent and they sang hymns and stood up on the table and drank beer and sang hymns. But I remember playing on the stage the first time and watching people. I remember going to South America for the first time, playing in Brazil, and feeling the energy of the people there. Playing in New Zealand, that was just absolutely incredible to be out there in the nature and playing outdoors. And I think, you know what, when I think back to all of it, though, my favorite moments are the people. You know, the people I was doing it with.
Yeah.
Riding in the van. You know, those are my two favorite things, those moments on the stage where we feel something that's beyond us.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
Because it really is about feeling something, experiencing God together. Right? We're all supposed to have this personal relationship with God, but the personal relationship always leads you back to a communal relationship with God.
Yes.
You know, it's sort of like this circular kind of pattern. And even if you want to get real philosophical, it's like the way the Father loves the Son, and the Son makes way for the Spirit, and the Spirit cries, Abba, Father. You know, it's like this, it's like this cyclical thing that is personal.
They prefer each other.
And communal.
Yeah.
They prefer one another. Right. You know, so it is that thing that, like, it is that it's experiencing God with this group of people together and traveling and, you know, and having, you know, some of the best experiences are when things go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember being on the side of the road in Texas, you know, broke down in the middle of nowhere, and this big truck comes by, and I remember sending my brother-in-law to talk to him because he's from Georgia and he plays up his southern accent, you know.
Yes, that's right. You know,
and he gets us towed somewhere because they, you know, he's able to talk.
Yeah,
you know, talk with the locals, and you know, I remember being in Brazil and my brother shutting the show down because it had rained, and we're standing on pallets. You know, like pallets that they built the stage out of pallets.
Yeah.
We're standing on pallets, and the water level is rising.
Oh, no.
And the cables are hanging over the water, and my brother shutting the thing down because he's afraid we're going to get electrocuted.
Yeah.
And I finished, you know, with an acoustic guitar without any power. You know, we're in, we're basically out in the jungle.
My goodness.
I mean, what a fantastic journey. But it's like, So many of my favorite memories are when things went wrong and how we handled that with the people we were with, you know. And those are some of my favorites. Traveling with my wife early on.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a season we really didn't get to travel together. We tried traveling with the kids when they were young. And you hear about people doing that, and you realize a lot of people don't, and then you realize why a lot of people don't. You know, so the kids are like adults. They have different temperaments.
Mm-hmm.
And mine were not meant to do that type of traveling.
Suited for the road, yeah.
But now my kids are growing up, and like my son is going to come out with me on part of the tour this spring.
That's so cool.
You know, so those have been some of my favorite moments, you know. And then when people, you know, I've had people come up to me and say, it's so simple because I take for granted that people, there are some people who have never had this thought.
Yeah.
This blows my mind because I grew up with two parents who love each other, two parents who love me, right? And two parents who love God and have always told me that God loves me.
Yes.
And that sounds like such a simple thing, like
it's
almost trite kind of thing, until you realize there are human beings in this world who have, not only have they never been told that God loves them, they have never had the thought. The thought has never crossed their mind that this eternal presence who created the universe, or that any sort of presence, or that any sort of God, or that any sort of being out they've never been told.
Yeah.
They've never even had the thought that God loves you and that God is for you, not against you.
Yeah.
Right? And even just like, you know, the spiritual implications are huge, but even psychological, just to like grow up knowing that like God is for me and not against me, what that does for you and what that forms in you. And so when people come up to me and say like, I'd never even had the thought, that thought never crossed my mind. I grew up in a way that I never had the thought that God thought about me, much less loved me or could be for me.
Yeah.
Like that is like, I realized that could be my legacy and I'd be fine with it. Yeah. Right?
That's absolutely.
I introduced people. If all I did was introduce people to the concept that maybe God exists, maybe God is aware of your existence, and maybe God loves you. If you would just consider those three concepts.
It's huge.
What it could do for you as a human being is huge.
Yeah.
You know, so that's some of the best stuff.
Yeah. And would you say that some of that would be a part of what your hope is for your music?
Absolutely.
Here moving forward as well is
absolutely
that connection with God.
Yeah. 100%. I think that's what it's always been since I was seven.
Yeah.
Feeling like the universe loved me, which obviously
that's God. Yeah.
And that I loved everyone else. Obviously.
Yeah.
That was God. Like, I feel like I have this concept. This is a little bit oversimplified.
Yeah.
Right? But I feel like both hyper-fundamentalists and deconstructionists, neither one tend to take it far enough.
Mm.
Right? Mm. I feel like a lot of times fundamentalists don't take Jesus' words seriously enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They don't. Yeah. They're not fundamental about the things Jesus says. And deconstructionists, they don't always deconstruct down to the to their place in the world, right?
Yeah.
They both tend to deconstruct to the place of their comfort, or you know, and fundamentalism not taking it to its fullest becomes tyranny, and deconstruction not taken to its fullest becomes chaos, right? But if you take them all the way, you find yourself at this place where, like, oh, you know, Jesus says that I was born and created to love God and love other people.
Mm-hmm.
And all of theology and all of my faith journey and all of my Christianity can be summed up, my purpose in life, in loving God and loving other people.
Right.
And the deconstructionists can get to the point where they realize, like, what is the meaning of life? You will not find meaning. You could make the language however you want.
Right.
Right? And so I'm open to however you want to change the language. But you will not find meaning aside from having a relationship with a higher power and having a relationship with other human beings.
Yeah.
And by relationship, I don't mean what you get out of it.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, meaning comes from sacrifice, right?
Mm.
It's like meaning comes from what you're willing to give in order to have, right? Meaning doesn't really come from receiving.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Meaning comes from giving. And so, like, anyway, I realized at 7 years old, I discovered those two things.
Yeah.
And I think we all probably find those in our own way when we're young, and then we spend the rest of our lives rediscovering those two things. And that's what I really hope with my music, with the things that I have to say, with life in general, is that people can at least feel or encounter those two ideas in everything that I do.
Yeah. I love that. You get connected to Jesus.
Yeah.
And his love for us and him being, as he said of himself, he's the way, the truth, the life.
Yeah.
No one comes to the Father but through him. It's a beautiful journey, isn't it?
With lots
of ups and downs and,
you
know, trying to figure this out and feeling devastated and all those things.
Yeah.
So, well, you've put words to a lot of those journeys, and it really has helped people, and it's been wonderful to watch.
Wow.
God use you in this way. So thanks for saying yes all along the way.
Yeah, thank you.
And for doing it. I also just take a moment to thank you, too, for way back, I was looking at it again today, 2009, you had this idea, which you followed through on, too, by the way, a really good one, is doing an album to support the kids that we're serving in Africa with clean drinking water. Mm. And so you really pushed on that. You got a producer, you got all your friends, these other artists, wrote original songs for it. The song you wrote was called I Dream There Was a Fountain.
Yep.
It was what we named the album as well.
Yeah.
It's fantastic, actually. Great album.
Yep.
You can find. Yeah, it still is. Really good. It's not on Spotify. It's on Apple Music. It's also on our website, hydratinghumanity.org. You can find it there, download it. But thank you for doing that, as well as the ways you've given, loved people you'll never meet in Africa by helping raise money for us and doing benefit concerts and all that too, and being on our board. And so I really appreciate your investment in people's lives behind the scenes, that stuff people don't get to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Well, that song was kind of inspired by your story, which I'm sure you've told.
Not on this broadcast yet.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. But Matt really inspired me with his work that he was doing and the whole journey to digging wells in Africa. And initially it was about water, selling water here and giving people water there.
Yep.
I was like, well, if you can transfer water, if the value of water can be transferred over, you know, bottles can be transferred into human lives.
Yeah, right.
You know, and that's really not an overstatement, really. It's
that's true. Yeah.
This amount of money costs to dig a well, and this well will probably save this many lives.
Yeah.
Like it sounds like oversimplification, but it's somewhat true.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, we can do this with music, too. We can make music, and we can sell CDs, and a CD costs a certain amount of money to make.
Yeah.
Make a certain amount of money, it can provide to dig this many wells, reaches this many people.
Yep.
Then we did a CD release, raised a bunch of money.
Oh, yeah.
We dug a bunch of wells. It was an adventure. It was an absolute adventure. Yeah.
Yeah. Really fun.
Yeah.
And those wells are still giving water, still giving life to kids, moms today. Yeah. So, yeah.
Lasting impact. One of the most beautiful things about your work is that it doesn't end. You guys keep the wells working.
Right.
They continue. You know, hopefully for lifetimes.
That's our plan. Yeah. Keep them going forever. Yeah. So, you've got a tour coming up.
I do.
You got a new album about to come out, right?
Coming out in 2 weeks. I don't know when this podcast will release, but it's coming out April 4th.
Okay. Yeah. Yep. And so, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
And maybe even maybe coming full circle in some of your musical ambitions and what you feel like God has given you. How does that come out with this album? And
So I definitely went through my own sort of period of deconstruction, which I know that word gets way overused.
Yeah.
And it means about 500 different things,
you
know? Yep. But I went through a little bit of a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
I honestly feel like that's part of the Christian journey. That's part of the human journey.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so the dark night of the soul and whatever you want to call it, you know, like I'm a different person now than I was before. And apparently I'm the same person I was when I was seven.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I don't know how it all works. But I went through a season where I wasn't actively engaged in worship music.
Yeah.
Philosophically, it still has a value for God. And and so I think philosophically it's still worship music. But as far as songs that communities sing together, wasn't necessarily that type of music. And I wasn't necessarily planning to go back into that.
Yeah.
And I was fine with it. And I'd really come back to a place where I was very comfortable with who I was in the Lord and very comfortable with not doing worship music anymore. Mm. And then my father-in-law got sick, really, really bad sick. He got cancer and he battled it, thought he won, and then it came back. And I mean, you know how that goes.
Yep.
It's my wife became one of his primary caretakers.
Yeah.
And I slowed way down because I needed to be there for him.
Yeah.
Really needed to be there for my wife and be there for my family.
Yeah.
Didn't know how long that was. I didn't know I was going to slow down for so long.
Yeah.
Ended up being about a year, maybe a year and a half. A very long time, you know. Did enough to pay the bills and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
But mostly slowed down. And during that time, I also felt pretty stuck. That's a complex time.
Because
we're all
for sure
battling these complex emotions of my wife losing her dad.
Oh, man.
Also trying to take care of him and how difficult that is. Just practically. So practically hard, emotionally hard. You know, just scraping by, doing your best by the kids, but some days just letting them watch TV because you got to run out and take them to the hospital.
Oh, man.
You don't get back till 2 a.m. You know, like that kind of thing. And so I'm there and I'm supportive. I'm also feeling a little bit stuck, and then my identity issues are like stirring up. I'm like, I thought I worked through this, but like I'm not able to do this thing that I felt like gave me value to the world.
Yeah,
because I'm here trying to help, you know. And then during that stuck time, I had these worship choruses that I would just sing around the house to get me through the day. And I was not going to record them. Some of them are very old.
Yeah,
that I'd had back from the 2012.
Yeah.
Some of them were brand new, and I found myself singing them. Then after my father-in-law passed, we're obviously going through the grieving process, but we're also asking ourselves, well, what do we want to do with our lives now? You know, we're in this new season. We miss him, but also we're like, what are we going to do? And And I think it was Sarah's idea. She's like, you need to record those songs. Mm-hmm. I was like, I kind of agree. I feel like these mm-hmm. songs need a home. So I started working on this worship album. Mm. And this whole new life came to me through this process. So now I'm doing worship music again. And I really didn't see myself doing that in a, you know, in this type of capacity.
Yeah, that's so great.
So,
yeah, it's kind of like when the flood is rising, you have to turn electricity off and do something different.
Exactly.
You got another life issue that rises and you make an adjustment. And so it's so great because I think you really, one of the things that God has done with you is with worship music in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's gone around the world. Yeah. I feel like it's going to be powerful yet. Wow. The songs that are going to about to be released and the future ones too.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah. It helps people connect with the Lord. And,
yeah,
and while we're talking here, you know, if you hear background music right now, we have we're at a conference now. And so they're doing a class right behind this wall. So if you're hearing someone sing, you're not going crazy. It's really happening in the background. So John Mark, with the tour coming up, new album coming out, how do people, if they want to come to a show or they want to listen to your music, what's the best way for them to connect and find out?
The music's on all the streaming platforms, so they can search John Mark McMillan. You can go to my website, johnmarkmcmillan.com. I'm most active on Instagram as far as all the platforms go. I'm present on the others, but that's the one I'm most active on. And so if you want to keep up, that's the best way. If you want to really keep up, I've got a text messaging platform, you know, and I've got an email list.
Yeah.
You can join any of those if you don't want the algorithm to, if you want to make sure you're, you know, you're really seeing the stuff that I'm putting out. So.
Thanks so much for carving out some time to be with us doing this, and so good to see you again. Yeah. And so it was really, really awesome for me to see your family up on stage too last night and again. And just love you guys.
Yeah.
But thank you for watching today, listening, if you're listening to this podcast without the video on here. We'll plan on doing a lot more of these in the future. And periodically releasing them. You can find this on, of course, on our YouTube channel, on our Facebook channel, on Spotify. Make sure you like, you can follow us, and get some more content from us this way. So thanks again, John Mark, and Lord bless you guys. Have a great one.